Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Monday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And, Jim, we dive right in with three meaty topics to start off the week, good, bad, and crazy. The good is Gene Sperling reluctantly admitting that the sequester was, in fact, the president's idea, something we've known for a long time, something Bob Woodward pointed out, and I guess we could have avoided the whole flap last week if the White House just would have admitted this a few days earlier. But Gene Sperling was on Meet the Press with David Gregory, and here's a couple of clips from that. One includes a ridiculous analogy that Sperling borrows from Jonathan Chait of The New Yorker, and then he finally grudgingly admits the sequester was the president's idea.
First of all, the sequester's not something that I proposed. It's something that Congress has proposed. It will not happen. The budget that we're talking about is not reducing our military spending. It's maintaining it.
As the White House has acknowledged, that's not accurate. The president did propose this. He didn't want it to become law, and Republicans supported it, but it was the White House's idea. He said there unequivocally, it will not happen. David, and yet it's happened. David, is there some responsibility he bears for that?
David, Jonathan Chait, The New York Magazine, you know, gave the following analogy. A mugger comes up to you and says, give me your wallet. You say, I don't have my wallet, but here's my watch. Well, technically, giving your watch was your idea, but it doesn't really tell the whole story.
Is the president right or wrong in that clip that I just showed you?
I think the president was overall right in that the idea of an across-the-board all spending cut was the idea of Republicans. But yes, we put forward the design of how to do that. But David,
which was the sequester?
Well, Jim, on the one hand, I guess we're moving in the right direction. We were hostage takers with guns to the heads of the American people. Now we're just muggers stealing watches. So I guess the rhetoric's being toned down a little bit here.
Steal the watch, then shoot the hostage, apparently, would be the new philosophy. Overall right, I guess, is the newest synonym for false. We can expect that from PolitiFact and Truth Watch and all those different groups. Overall, it reminds me of a great line from Coupling when he said, what do you mean you said yes? And the answer was no. It's like, well, I only missed by one word. So, people are probably saying, well, why is everybody on the right side so obsessed with, you know, who came up with the idea? Well, if Obama's, you know, message is we have to stop this idea I came up with, his argument is nonsensical. And you look at that line of the debate and you look at everything he said now about well, first of all, he seemed to insinuate that the Capitol Police would be getting pay cuts, which is not true. The janitors would be getting pay cuts, and that's not true either. I mean, way back from 2007, some of us have been saying all statements from Barack Obama come with an expiration date, all of them. And it is very tough to have a public debate with Barack Obama because he lies, and he lies rather shamelessly about these things. As you'll say, you know, when he did his radio interview with Al Sharpton, he said, look, you know, the folks on the right really don't believe the role of the government is to help sick kids. And, you know, he just attributes the absolute most malicious and evil motives to his opposition. And he is the center of all good sense and common sense. And, you know, there are, you know, some say X and some say this extreme path. And I'm picking this totally sensible role in the middle. And when you put it to him, he basically believes he's completely unresponsible for the situation of the sequester. And when the, you know, he asked the reporters, well, what do you want me to do? Well, gee, Mr. President, you know, there's a big story by Ezra Klein in the Sunday Post saying, well, the administration has proposed a various form of means testing for Medicare, but the Republicans have to go along with tax hikes to do it. Well, we just had tax hikes in January, and now we're like, it's been 63 days since we've raised taxes, and now the administration insists upon more of them. No, Mr. President, we've already made our compromise. Now it's time for you to make a compromise. And the fact that he's digging in his heels here indicates, you know, that this guy, he thinks eventually everyone's going to come around to him, that eventually public opinion will decide that this is ridiculous and uncontrollable, and we can't live under this 2% cut any longer. And as a result of that, we must give him what he wants, which is more tax hikes. And I think he's betting wrong on this. The fact that the Gene Sperling and the other White House folks are acknowledging any complication in their very simple "we good, they bad" narrative is probably a very interesting sign of a bit of a rattle in the engine on their side.
Yeah, and in contrast to the Obama strategy in picking fights and dividing groups and Americans over the sequester, wait till you even see what happens with the possible government shutdown and the debt ceiling in the weeks ahead. This is going to look like child's play. We had Mitt Romney over on Fox News Sunday, interviewed by Chris Wallace. And Mitt obviously wishes he had won. And the main reason he wishes he had won, because he thought he really could help on this particular issue, getting the economy going again. Here's what he said.
Now look at what's happening right now. I wish I were there. It kills me not to be there, not to be in the White House doing what needs to be done. The president is the leader of the nation. The president brings people together, does the deals, does the trades, knocks the heads together. The president leads. And I don't see that kind of leadership happening
right
now.
What is this president doing?
Well, he's campaigning. He's the only one that can say to his own party, look, you guys, I need you on this, and get some Republicans aside and say, pull them off one by one. We don't have to have these gridlock settings, one after the other, on issue after issue. And it's going to take real leadership and people in both parties willing to put aside political victories and start fighting for national victories.
And so, Jim, now you have some of the more liberal outlets saying, Romney says it's killing him that he's not president. No, it's killing him that the economy continues to suffer because of a lack of leadership. Big difference.
It is a big difference. But, you know, that's what we've come to expect from the Media Matters types and the Center for American Progress and folks like that. A couple thoughts come to mind hearing that from Mitt Romney. And yes, it is a bad martini. Bad job, America. Or I guess we should say, way to go, America. Way to go. In light of reelecting Obama. First of all, imagine how the markets would be responding to a President Romney. I had summarized sequestration, the deal back in 2011, as Barack Obama's bet that eventually he'd be dealing with a Speaker Pelosi, and Speaker Boehner's bet that he'd be dealing with President Romney. And if you pick either of these different scenarios, all Republican government controlled government or all Democrat controlled government, you would get a solution to the deficit. Under Democrats, you would get much higher taxes. They would, you know, go through the tax hikes we've had so far, elimination of more deductions, and probably much broader tax increases going on incomes well below the 400 grand or whatever the limit was down in January. Under President Romney and Speaker Boehner, I have a feeling we would have avoided these sequestration cuts with more serious cuts, including those that address entitlements. To summarize, the situation of sequestration is pretty simple, which is that, look, right now we're trying to balance the budget entirely through discretionary spending, which means no entitlements, and without middle-class tax hikes. This is what you get. Now, admittedly, as we said, it's only 2%, and we're still expected to run a deficit in the neighborhood of, you know, $900 billion this year. We're supposed to be dancing a jig because it's less than a trillion, the first less than a trillion deficit under President Obama, so la-di-da. But you look at that and you're thinking, well, gee, you know, the simpler thing is to put entitlements on the table. And, you know, you look at the numbers, just with a little bit of tweaking stuff like cost of living adjustments and calculations and a little bit of means testing for Medicare and stuff like that. Well, lo and behold, you end up with a making these programs sustainable. And how do you think the markets will respond the day we say, oh, by the way, that entitlement problem that's been this giant, you know, dark cloud hanging over our economy, fiscal doom, you know, just a few years down the road, fixed. You know, but you know, your 401k will be exploding that day. But no, we had to reelect the, you know, campaigner in chief who's, you know, continually campaigning. Front page of the Washington Post yesterday was Obama basically has given up on the Congress for the next 2 years and staking his entire presidency on having a Democratic House starting in January 2015. So the 2014 midterm elections have begun already.
This president's always been about the accumulation of power. He loved wielding it during the first 2 years when he did have a compliant House and Senate. And as you said, he's hoping to have that again. So let's hope he doesn't. On to martini number three now. And last week we finished off with the crazy martini of Dennis Rodman going to North Korea. That in of itself was pretty hysterical. But now we have his post-trip analysis. He was a guest of George Stephanopoulos on the This Week program. And first of all, here's the first of two clips. One, Rodman talking about what should be an inextricable bond between President Obama and the new North Korean dictator.
So you think he's different. What did he tell you about America, and what did you learn about him?
Guess what? The one thing I said to him, I said, we talked about it, if you see the clips or whatever, he loves basketball. And I said the same thing. I said, Obama loves basketball. Let's start there.
And if that wasn't sophisticated enough for you, here's George Stephanopoulos now challenging Rodman on the human rights record of North Korea.
He's a great guy. He's just a great guy. If you sit down and talk to him, you know, perception is perceiving how things
work. A great guy who puts 200,000 people in prison camps?
Well, you know, and guess what? It's amazing how we do the same thing here.
We have prison camps here in the United States?
We don't have prison camps. Guess what? This is all politics, right? This is all politics, right? And the one thing, he don't want to do that.
He doesn't want to do that. They just somehow stay open. If you'll permit us a Gen X moment, here's a clip from Billy Madison, the movie starring Adam Sandler back in the 90s that I think is appropriate for any time Dennis Rodman speaks.
What you just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard. At no point in your rambling, incoherent response were you even close to anything that could be considered a rational thought. Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it. I award you no points, and may God have mercy on your soul.
I don't know if we can summarize it any better than that response. The only thing I'm going to add is that somehow along the line, first of all, notice that North Korea gets more attention for having Rodman over than for setting off a nuclear weapon a couple of weeks ago. So there's that bizarreness. That's what it takes to get North Korea front and center on the Sunday shows. And then, like, you know, Rodman. I'm like, there are cable access shows that are turning down Dennis Rodman as a guest. You know, you're looking at all of the folks who have been on Celebrity Apprentice and all the VH1 shows and all that stuff. It's just utterly, utterly bizarre. I'm speechless, Greg. I can't come up with a one-liner that tops the bizarreness of this particular situation.
I think the best tweet after that, I don't even remember who it was from, Dennis Rodman was wearing this coat that looked like it was made out of $100 bills, and somebody was saying, I'm sure next week George will be wearing that same blazer on, on the This Week program. So, well done, Dennis Rodman. It's not easy to get a repeat back-to-back podcast in the Crazy Martini, but you've earned it, trust me.
Carmen Electra really let a winner slip through her fingers.
Yeah, it's hard to believe that one didn't work out. Jim, have a great day. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us again on Tuesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.